Welcome to episode 4 of Coffee Pods and Wads. This week's guest is Vincent Nestor. If you want to know more about what the podcast is about, go back and listen to episode 3. And thank you to anyone who got in touch over the last episode. It wasn't easy to record, but I got great feedback from it. And that means the world to me. You can follow us on Instagram at Coffee Pods and Wads. And we're also on patreon.com/coffeepodsandwads. Patreon is basically just a monthly subscription. You can give any amount you want. And it just helps make the podcast a bit better and me to get some of the money that I invested back, which would be great. Right, Vincent, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, it's great. We start off easy. So I thought I'd ask you about coffee first because it's a nice little gentle slope in. So you brought Mutley and Jack.
Yeah, very nice.
Coffee in. You know this guy.
Yeah.
He lives in Sweden, is it?
Yeah, he lives in Sweden.
And how do you know him?
Know him from, he lives the next village up in Ratote. He lived in the next village, but he was a humanitarian. Yeah. Exactly. Thanks for helping me out there. For the last 15 or 16 years. And then he was a coffee lover, coffee snob, maybe even like yourself. And he wanted to set up his own business. So he was based or in and around Sweden anyway. So is he from
Sweden? Like,
no. He's not. He's from
Ireland. Ireland.
Yeah, his mom and dad are still there. His family are there.
And what's sent him to Sweden?
The love of his life and coffee. Yeah.
Very good.
So that's why he's there.
He
set the business up in 2016 or 17. I think that's, 2016.
And Mutley is his dog.
Yeah, that's just...
And he's Jack.
Yeah. Just like your dogs.
Yeah.
Part of the family.
I don't know if mine would be a good branding opportunity.
Maybe there will be.
Do you drink much coffee?
Every day.
And just like, are you reliant on it? Like, would you be like, oh, I need a coffee now to go to the gym?
No. Definitely not. I love the taste.
Yeah, same.
When I was at my fittest, I used coffee though, for sure.
As a stimulant, like.
Yeah, as a stimulant performance. And it did make a difference.
Did?
It did. I was training twice a day.
Yeah.
And the second part of the day, I used it, and it always kickstarted me. Whether it was conditioning or strength, it always gave me a boost.
Coffee, or just something with caffeine in it?
3 shots of espresso was mixed in with whey protein, and it was not much water. It was with rice milk, and I used it, and it really fired me.
Yeah.
Always. I didn't drink any other coffee during that time, though. It was a 6 or 7 month period.
Yeah.
And it really made a difference.
Yeah.
It really made a difference.
I would have drank, I haven't had a can of Monster in about 6 months now, but I would have, anytime I went to the gym, I would have had a can of Monster. And then it kind of became, not a crutch, but like, I was a bit like, oh, if I don't have one now, will I be able to train as well, you know, that kind of way. Like, I was kind of nearly reliant on it out of my own ignorance rather than actually being reliant on it. So then I just stopped, mainly because they're just too big. So if I was going into a cardio class or something, and I open a can of Monster 15 minutes, if I'm in warming up or something 15 minutes before a class, having a can of Monster, there's no way if I finish it, it'll come back up when I'm on the bike. And if, like, there's no way I'm going to finish it in the time window I have. So I was just leaving half cans of Monsters all over the place. So then I just said, like, look, I'll just stop. So I started drinking more coffee. And I would prefer coffee, like, it's nicer. And it's like, I have no idea what's in half of those energy drinks.
Mostly probably not good.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what any of the numbers or letters mean. So, and I know what's in coffee.
Yeah. No, like, I stopped because we went on holidays.
Yeah.
And my daughter bought me a cappuccino with a lot of cream. And I said, I missed this too much. I have to stop taking it as a stimulant and go back to having coffee. So I have coffee. When I was working a lot, I was drinking shed loads of coffee, 13 or 14 or 15 cups of coffee a day. Jeez. To keep me going. But I was working 14, 15 or 16 hours. So I was nearly having one an hour at the time, 6 or 7 days a week. But no, I have 2 or 3 coffees a day, not necessarily in the morning or afternoon or in the evening. Maybe one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and one in the evening. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. I love the taste. Nothing else.
What's been your favorite coffee to date? Like, say, when I was thinking about this last week, it it was more the situation that gave me my
I heard you say that about just after the next day when Sloane was born. So Boon is a coffee, local coffee in the Netherlands. It's strong, it's a French blend, and I love it, absolutely love it. Can be 6 or 7 months before I get one of them, and I don't buy it or anything like that. I wait till I'm there and I'm drinking it locally in the south of the Netherlands, and it's absolutely fantastic.
What brought you to the Netherlands in the first place?
Work.
Doing?
I'm a supply chain director with a big company, a big electrical company, and they have factories and warehouses all over the world. And at one stage, I ran all those factories and warehouses. 112 factories and 130 warehouses all over the world. And our main DC was in the Netherlands.
And was that your 15 or 16 hour a day?
Yeah, 7 days a week.
And why did you slow down? Just the toll, like?
No, I two things made me look at my life. One was I was after getting the jump up, so I was going from director to VP, and they gave me full over warehouses and factories. And I was sitting I was getting a flight home at Christmas time, the 23rd, and it was cancelled. Didn't really bother me. They said the flight was going to be the next day, Christmas Eve. Booked into a hotel in Brussels. Really, really good hotel. Top hotel. One of the top hotels. The company was paying for it. And I was propped up in this bed, and cushions all around me, a huge flat screen TV, ordered dinner to the room, had dinner in the room, had the laptop, fell asleep on the bed that night with the laptop on my lap, and woke up the next morning and the laptop was just fell onto the bed beside me, and I thought, can't be living this life. Just can't be living this life.
Laptop had work on it, like?
Yeah, I was still working.
Yeah.
That was my 14 or 15 or 16 hours a day. It evolved around work. And then when I went home that Christmas, I realised that my brothers were getting older and lots of friends. I hadn't seen lots of friends in a long time, and I hadn't seen the birth of two of my nieces. And I was thinking, I missed my one niece, her 21st. I was missing things belonging to my own daughter. And I said, this can't keep going.
Yeah.
I have to change. The following summer, I knew it had to change then, because I was doing a lot of endurance running, but I had stopped a lot of that, and I was putting on weight. But it was in the middle of the summer, and I just from nowhere in the middle of a meeting, I started to get these palpitations, and I thought, what's going on here? And I started to move around, and I was talking to the people that were in the room, and it was during an audit of the warehouse, and I stopped again, and it collapsed.
Jeez.
And a few days later, I went to see the doc. A few days, by the way, because I had no time. So a few days later, I went to see the doc, and he told me it was a panic attack. Yeah. But I didn't know it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had started to get these panic attacks, only I didn't know them. And it was because there was something constantly in my head all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was sleeping. Like, 3 or 4 hours a day. And even when I was sitting down, I wasn't enjoying coffee. I was drinking. Like, that's when I was drinking coffee. I was just to keep awake.
Yeah.
It's not a life. So since then, I've taken a lot of reductions in job responsibility. Yeah. I still love what I do. Company are very good to me.
Yeah.
Because over a period of time, I've had ups and downs inside in that company for medical reasons.
Yeah.
And they've still been good to me. But I put in a lot of hours.
Yeah.
That's why they're good to me.
Yeah, you've earned the grace.
I earned that right over time.
Do you listen to many podcasts?
No, yours was the first.
Really?
That's a little bit not true. So friends would always send me links to Soundcast or something. You know, something on Twitter, and you'd click in and you'd listen to 10, 15 minutes and you'd go, wow, that's brilliant. But literally downloading something and starting it from start to finish, yours was the first one.
That's good.
I've listened to a few since. Waterfords one since. But it's also over the Christmas, so I had a bit of time.
Yeah.
I still don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
So
they're handy. I think they're handy if you're
they're brilliant in the car. Somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, they are brilliant in the car.
I remember I tried to listen to that, the Just Got Better, the Waterford one, on a run before. And it was just the voice in my head telling me to stop running was louder than their voice in my ears. So it's just, I couldn't do it anymore. So I wouldn't be able to do a training or a, but in the car it's great, like, or if you're, well, I suppose you shouldn't be listening to something when you're cycling, but if you have one headphone in, if you're going to work or something,
I think it's okay. Or if you're on the bike in the gym.
Yeah, grand. If iTunes approached you to start your own podcast, what would you do it on, do you think?
100 ways to be an idiot.
You've 99 ticked off.
At least. Yeah. No, I'm not a specialist in anything. Yeah. In my job I am, and outside that I'm really not. But 100 ways to be an idiot. Somebody once said to me, why are you so good at your job? Because I fucked it up.
So many times.
So many times.
Yeah.
And fucking something up is either an opportunity to tell yourself you're an idiot, or an opportunity to say, whoa, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah.
And I am super good at thinking that I'm not an idiot to myself.
Yeah.
I can say that out loud with some, whoa, I'm an idiot. But I'm actually saying to myself, I won't do that again.
Yeah.
But I don't call myself an idiot. And a lot of people beat themselves up way too much. Like, way too much. Yeah. Oh, I left the light on. Yeah. And yet 5 minutes later, they're in the kitchen. I left that light on all night. Yeah. What's it like?
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I don't do that. I definitely don't do that. But along that way, I definitely fucked a lot of things up.
Yeah.
And just when I heard you talking about last week, when you said about your daughter, when, you know, you knew you were ready. Well, I remember when I was told, when Fiona told me that she was pregnant. I just went, what? How did that happen?
You were there.
Yeah. How did that happen? Why? What are we going to do? Yeah. Like, my reaction was so bad.
Yeah.
It was like a joke. Yeah. But like 20 minutes later, I was different and I was going, oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, kind of had to fight the negativity a bit, like.
Well, I don't know if it's negativity or if it's just, you know, something, responsibility.
Yeah.
Especially in my early age, I either fought against it or didn't want it.
Yeah.
And my latter years, I'm the absolute opposite.
Yeah.
I love responsibility. I love the feeling of having to do something for someone and be responsible to get it right.
Yeah.
There's a difference, responsibility and not wanting to get it right. Because a lot of people don't want to get it right.
Yeah.
That's why they don't want responsibility.
Yeah.
Because if you take on responsibility, just like you again, I'm going to give you your nugget was, if you say it out loud,
yeah,
you have to do it.
Yeah.
Well, if you take responsibility, you have to do it and you have to get it right.
Yeah.
And I just love that feeling of, yeah, we got it right there.
Yeah.
Especially if there's more than one person involved in something getting right, because that's when it's harder. That's what my job is. My job is moving a lot of stuff from all over the world into somebody's home.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it takes a lot of people, yeah, and a lot of fuck-ups, because it goes wrong along the way.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts, like.
Yeah, and in the end, as long as it gets there, that's the achievement.
And was there a sense of that with Filthy then, this year? Like being a cog in a big machine, having a responsibility that you had to get right, your part.
The Filthy was something absolutely incredible. What people see, either if you were there or what people saw on the TV, is like 100 times more.
Yeah.
And what do I mean by that is that most of the Irish judges had 7 or 8 months of training.
Yeah.
And most of the Irish judges were not from Dublin.
Yeah.
More than half were not. People came up from Cork, Kerry, Galway.
Yeah.
All over the country. The north of Ireland.
Yeah.
All over the north of Ireland, actually. Donegal. They came from all the counties. For an hour and a half on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Some of them came up early and did a workout in Boo beforehand. So they had put in an awful lot of work. A huge amount of work. Not an awful lot of work. A huge amount of work. But a couple of weeks before the filthy started, I was still going to be judging. And a guy, Ryan Tate, came up and Christopher said, "Oh, this guy is going to be the judge's coordinator." And he started saying all the things he was going to do. And I started thinking with my work hat on for the first time.
Hmm.
And I started thinking, there'll be a lot to do. I started thinking that there's Christopher, who wasn't really a head judge. He was like director of operations because he had way more tasks than being head. And matter of fact, he had four head judges doing that role. So he was, again, director of operations. When something went wrong, he was there to discuss it with the head judges, or maybe with the head judges and Jamie. But I went to him after that session and I said, look, there's a lot that Ryan has to do. If you think that Ryan needs help, I said, I'll give him help.
Hmm.
And he said, oh, that sounds like a good idea, but give me a few days. So a couple of days later, he sent me a message and said, Finny, that's a good idea because there's a lot to do.
Yeah.
So he said, I'd love, especially because I could jump in if there was a judge needed, or... So he was happy with that. So that next 2 weeks, then I started looking at something differently, more like my job.
Yeah.
You know, how do you get things from A to B, and who'll need help and when they'll need it. And when we arrived on the Thursday, that before we were having a judges meeting that day, going through all the workouts, except the Sunday workouts. And then we're going to have the athletes briefing after it. And it just... You know, when everybody was there, when all the judges came from all over the world, you just said, this is that. When you're seeing the arena for the first time, with nobody in it, you're going, this is going to be huge. But those next 3 days, they went like that.
Yeah.
They went like that. And the work that everybody puts in outside it. So in me, you have this scale, you know, where we always talk about athletes and judges.
Yeah.
You know, the athletes being, everybody wants to be an athlete in CrossFit.
Yeah.
They really do. You know, that's what you aspire to. You know, Tia, Matt, that's what you want to be, you know. And then it comes, like you said, lots of different levels then after that. And then maybe the next level is judges.
Yeah.
But in an event like that, everybody is on the same level. Everybody. Somebody has to clean all those toilets.
Yeah.
Somebody has to organize those people.
That's the thing, like, obviously the athlete needs to be there or nothing's happening in that lane, but, like, if a judge isn't there, that whole heat falls apart, like.
Completely.
Or if some, you know, like, if a piece of equipment doesn't arrive, that whole heat falls apart, or that workout falls, you know, like, it was incredible, like, it was monstrous, the scale that it was on, and the amount of moving parts, even when, between workouts, there was, like, 40 people running onto the floor to clear off some stuff, and then 40 more bringing on other stuff. And it's like, where are they keeping all these people? Like, they must have just had a barn out the back.
There was 40 or 50 people in with the equipment.
Mad, like.
So Eamon was running the equipment, like, military style. And these are volunteers.
Yeah.
Everybody does this voluntary. This is something that everybody was doing for the sport.
Do you think that was like same as with your job, you had kind of built up a certain level of grace with your employers, that they were like, you know, they were good to you because of all the effort that you put in and because of your history with them or whatever.
Mm.
Do you think there's a similar thing with Filthy, that they had built up good grace with the community, that they were able to not ask more of them, but like that the community were more than willing to be like, hell yeah, I'll do that, I'll get involved, I'll do anything. You know, like if a new group had come in and suddenly decided, we're going to start doing a sanctioned competition, we need volunteers, we need this, we need that, do you think they would have gotten the same response? Or is it because it's Darina and Jamie and Chris and them? Do you think it's because...
There's a couple of levels to that. One is that the Filthy has been the best competition in Ireland for a number of years.
Yeah.
People just want to go. Whether it's to compete... Then you want to watch.
Yeah.
Like, it's the most attended event.
Yeah.
People want to go.
Yeah.
It, like, if you're not there, you want to go.
Yeah.
But everybody wants to be in the Filthy. Yeah. Everybody wants to be in the Filthy. Then everybody wants to be in the Filthy. If that's being in the Filthy, that's being a volunteer or being a judge or being an athlete. And then you want to see it. So first of all, that's the grace that had. Then the second thing is that Jamie, but especially Darina, is just such a huge driving force.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine that somebody that is so powerful but yet so humble.
She's so nice.
Look, on the Sunday morning, you know, when everybody was destroyed.
Yeah.
Okay. Darina was cleaning down.
I meant to say that. I saw her. It was Sunday mid-afternoon, like.
Well, yeah. And late morning, mid-afternoon.
We arrived. It was early. After the run or whatever. We arrived after that, after the run and cycle. And we went in and we were walking, turned the corner, and I started laughing, or I was like, what are you laughing at? And I was like, what's the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen from, like, essentially a managing director? Like, and it shows the care she has and what's happening. She could have easily delegated that job, but she was emptying bins in, like, the corner.
She was doing it all morning.
Do you know, it's madness. It shows the mentality that she has and that they have, that it's like, you know, like you said, the same level. Like.
Yeah, yeah, it's the same level. And she drives that same level. Yeah. She treats...
It's easy to say it.
The two cleaning girls that was in our area, because there was different areas, she treats them the very same way as Sarah Sigmund's daughter,
yeah,
or the top judge, or yeah, whoever. They're all getting treated the same. They're not getting treated any better. They're getting the same meals. We're all getting the same meals brought down. They're getting the same water. She's going over and asking them, are you okay?
Yeah.
She's just an amazing woman.
Because it's very
Jamie and Christopher, all the team are great.
Yeah.
But for me, Darina is just... She's the biggest driving force behind Irish CrossFit at the moment.
Yeah.
A part of what she's doing is she's driving us forward, and everybody else is following her or helping to push her on.
Yeah, yeah.
One or the other. But she's leading the way.
Yeah. I remember at Capital Games, like, whatever, 3 years ago, I remember my wife Orla was doing that. And Darina was judging her.
Correct. Yeah.
And it was like, it was the first time, now I did it that year as well, but it was the first time that I saw a judge as invested in, like, someone she didn't know. Like, they literally met, like, walked over, what's your team name? Shake hands. Do you know what the workout is? Yeah. And then it was as if they've been friends for 15 years. Like, Darina was doing every squat with them.
Yeah.
She was like nearly jumping with the double unders. She was like willing them on and like encouraging them or whatever, and I'd never seen that before. And then it's great, I think, that it's obviously a natural instinct that she has, because you can't fake it. No. And you can't fake it for as long as she's been doing it. Like you say, she's a driving force, but like in that workout where she was like screaming them on and encouraging them and like head bobbing with every rep, like smiling and like jumping up in the air when they finish the workout and hugging them and everything, she's the same now with,
yeah,
do you know, like
at a sanctioner,
yeah, or like just even that, like everyone's in it together, that it's like that. Like, I meant to talk to you about that, because like we met at Capital Games the same year, and I can't remember the workout, but there was a rower in it anyway, and you had to row for meters at the end.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget sitting down on the rower and you were like shouting in my ear to keep going, like you were telling me how long was left and to keep going, that, I don't know, we had to swap partners or something after a certain amount of time, but like
90 seconds or something, yeah, like that.
And
yeah,
it was like you had to max meters, and yeah, I just remember you going like shouting like you've got more, keep going, like go harder or whatever. And then about a year ago I was doing the CrossFit judges course for the Open, and one of the lines in the
CrossFit judges don't coach,
say, you're not a coach, you're not a cheerleader. That's bullshit, like, at our level, at like Open, there's a certain point, I suppose, where you'd look pretty stupid if you were like shouting at someone, yeah, at like Matt Fraser to keep going, like. But I think it definitely, doing that, seeing Darina with Orla and you with me, and there's been a few other judges like Elaine, and there's been a couple of others. There's another guy that was at that Capital Games, but I don't know his name. But I remember messaging Capital Games about you, Elaine, and that other guy. There was a picture of him. So I screenshot and sent it to him. I was like, the three of these were unbelievable all weekend. But like, that makes such a difference to someone, to someone's workout and to someone's day, when someone like, who doesn't know them, shows a little bit of belief and a little bit of encouragement or whatever, like, rather than, you know, that kind of sterile, like, you know, one, two.
I, Yeah, no, look.
Like, do you know, when you're judging, when you see someone coming on, because you've judged so much, when you see someone coming on, do you think, like, do you consciously say, right, I'm going to help these as much as I can? Or does it just kind of happen instinctively, like, that you just find yourself doing it? Or are you even aware that you make a difference, that you make the difference that you make?
No, I'm it's not a purpose thing in my head.
Yeah.
But I go out with the feeling that I want to make it easier for every single athlete. So at the very start, if you're RX, you know, I'm asking the very simple questions, no matter what event it's there, you know, do you understand the workout? Is there anything you want to ask me? Yes, no.
Yeah.
And if that's a no, then it's a no.
Yeah.
Then I am counting them. I'm making sure they're doing it. If they don't, if it's a no rep, I'm telling them beforehand, look, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to start counting depth. If you hear that, you're on the limit.
Yeah.
The next one would be no rep. Great. So they understand. I make the rules for them beforehand. But when you're in a competition, let's take the Midlands throwdown.
Yeah.
And it's a beginner competition.
Yeah.
And that, let's say that lady or guy is in CrossFit for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I've had a good few of those.
Yeah.
And they don't know what a dumbbell is. Okay. And they see a dumbbell for the first time. It's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about snatches. And she started doing squats.
Yeah.
Like, you can't treat every single person the same way.
Yeah.
You have to treat people. It'd
be pretty cold hearted to just say.
Yeah, no rep.
No.
Yeah, no rep. No rep. No rep.
Yeah.
And there was, that day, there was a lot of people that were not doing reps.
Yeah.
So you just try and mix the no rep with telling them what to do. But yeah, they have to get through the workout. You can't really coach. But sometimes, if somebody is on that art of giving up,
yeah,
that's where I probably go over the line of being a judge to say, come on, the fuck. Literally,
yeah,
start shouting or roaring or not necessarily roaring, but telling them they can do it.
Yeah.
Like, one of the most important things is what we talked a little bit about earlier, is somebody, they're on that edge of giving up. Because they don't think they can do it.
Mm.
They don't think they can do it, but they can actually do it.
Mm.
So it's not putting them through torture. It's they can actually do it.
Yeah.
And they go to that other place and they find out. You say, yes, you can do it. Come on, come on. You can do that. That, to be told that in the middle of when you're dying, okay, another person believes in me. Maybe I can do it.
Yeah.
No matter what that is. That does make a difference.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest, judging somebody new or judging somebody at the very top is all the same. Lots of people said to me before the 50 came, who are you looking forward to seeing at the 50? I wasn't looking forward to anybody.
Yeah.
Watching somebody give 100% is always good.
Yeah.
What's the difference at the highest level is that they can do something, the volume is normally bigger.
Yeah.
The weights are higher. That's all.
Yeah.
But they're not doing it any better.
Hmm.
They're keeping pull-ups or chest-to-bar pull-ups or muscle-ups are the same.
Yeah.
But they can do it for longer.
Yeah.
Their volume is greater. Their weight, the weight they can lift is greater. That's the difference. They're not pretty. It's not better. They're not in a score of 10 for it looks great.
Yeah.
Theirs might be on the verge of not looking great because they're trying to only do what they need to do.
Yeah.
Where somebody in a lower grade might look absolutely beautiful, you're going, oh my god, look at those toes to bar.
Yeah.
They're fantastic.
But there might only be two of them.
Yeah, or three. Or five.
Yeah. What's your opinion then on, say, this is the first year of, well, the first full year, I suppose, of all the sanctions that, you know, like last year there's a few, this year there's more.
More, there's loads.
Yeah.
I don't know, what is there, 30 or 40?
There's tons, like.
Yeah.
Are you kind of lamenting the loss of regionals, or like I was talking to Orla about this morning, and I was kind of saying that sanctionals is like as close to fully professionalizing the sport as you'll get, because like, let's say take Sarah Sigmund's daughter, for example, she could potentially earn more if Tia will probably win the games this year. So if Tia wins the games and Sarah Sigmund's daughter keeps entering all these sanctionals and keeps winning all these sanctionals, she could potentially come out with more money. And like, she's, if you can make yourself marketable and if you can make yourself you know, if you can find that will to keep entering sanctionals and if you're good enough to keep winning them, you could professionalize yourself without ever winning the games, or, you know, really coming, well, not close, that sounds harsh, but you know what I mean, without podiuming at the games, you can professionalise yourself. Like, is it making it harder for the second 98% that are below that top 2%, who are going to keep winning sanctional events, who are going to keep...
We should be honest and say that 85% of everybody in CrossFit doesn't know anybody at the top table. Like, they might know Matt Fraser to look at. They might know, or they might know any of the women, or they might know only the women, and they might know any of the men.
Yeah.
85% of the people in the gyms, CrossFit gyms that I go in and out of, have no fucking idea of the top table.
Yeah.
They don't know the ins and outs. They don't know the difference between regionals and sanctionals. They have no idea. Yeah. They've never watched it on their telly. They walk through that gym door, three times or four times or maybe even five times, or every day a week, and they come there to get away.
Yeah.
Or to do what they believe is their sport, whatever, for 1 hour.
Yeah.
So there's a huge amount of people that don't live in that world.
Yeah.
We might live in that world. Whether sanctionals or regionals are different, they're definitely different. Yeah. But the sport is very young and it's evolving, and it will keep evolving. I think Andy said it a couple of weeks ago that you know, this is a wait and see, and I think they will wait and see. Yeah. And if it's successful, they'll keep it.
Yeah.
If they feel that it's developing and growing the sport,
It has to grow it, because one regional in Berlin or whatever
is not growing it.
Sanctionals in England, Ireland, France, you know, like
no, the regionals were lopsided.
Yeah, you can reach a far greater audience doing what they're doing now.
Yeah,
outside of America anyway.
But I'm still not sure if all the sanctionals are needed either.
Yeah,
I think it maybe will be a happy medium.
Yeah.
That they will pick an amount and they will be spread across the globe.
Yeah, like 5 in Europe, 5 in America.
Something. Yeah, something like that. Maybe 5 in Asia, and maybe...
1 in India, because someone in India is listening to this podcast.
Okay.
So whoever that is.
1 in India for sure then. But I think India is in Asia, so you're okay.
Well, it's a subcontinent.
Yeah, okay.
So all you really are concerned with then is once it's improving. Doesn't really matter how it improves, once it improves.
I think the improvement piece is what makes CrossFit different. And it does make CrossFit different. Like, more and more people are getting fitter and fitter.
Yeah.
Like, 5 years ago, very few people could do muscle-ups, even in RX. In Ireland, let's just say. Now it's a normal thing.
Yeah, now it's an RX competition in Ireland. Now is nearly an elite competition. An intermediate is nearly an RX, and a scale is nearly an intermediate. You know what I mean? Like,
I think we're still not at that elite stage where we have enough athletes that are elite.
But like,
if you go to UK,
there
is a lot of elite athletes there.
Even
if you go to France, there's a lot of elite athletes there. Like somebody, like the top athletes, the very top 10 athletes in Ireland now, they're quite a bit above everybody else.
Yeah.
There's a bit of growing there still to be done. But what's coming behind it is intermediate level is pushing up that RX level. So we have to keep having a lot of comps. We have to maintain the standards to grow that.
Yeah.
But it's grown quite fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like Joe going last year and winning Castle Games was a good thing also for Irish sport. And any other Irish athlete going over, Sam and Jamie going abroad and always finishing in the top 10. That they're all, that's a good benchmark. And they do.
Yeah.
Any Irish athlete that goes abroad, they tend to finish up well up the leaderboard. Yeah. Top 10, not bottom.
I suppose
not bottom 10.
They wouldn't bother going if they didn't think.
Well, yeah, they have the standard.
Yeah.
Or better.
Yeah. I saw there's a good few people, like, I think Ty put something up on his... He's doing the Lowlands qualifier, I think, is he? And like Sam did Canada last year.
Mm.
He's named down for a couple of things this year. And then, I don't know, is Jamie going on his own or as a team?
I think he's going to keep going with the team for a while, but he's still young. I mean, Jamie...
I think it's just because he's been around so long. You kind of think
he's still young.
Yeah.
He can do the team piece if he wants to for a year or two and still lose out. Yeah.
Right, with you mentioned a couple of things there. about endurance races and stuff when you were at your pre-panic attack phase.
Yeah.
You've told me a couple of stories in the past that took almost an hour after the conversation finished for me, like, to be... I remember at the in Tullamore at the Midlands Throwdown, you told me a story, and I was sitting in the car driving home about an hour later, and I was like, what? Like, I was retelling the story to Orla, and I was like, no, I must have this wrong, like. But you said... So in the same conversation, you told me two things. One was that you did some kind of ultramarathon thing in Germany or somewhere. Correct. Where you slept in a hedge.
Yeah.
And then the second one was... I'll direct quote it as well as I can, but it was, oh yeah, intended on doing a marathon, or intended on doing
half, marathon.
Half a marathon, but myself and another, I took a wrong turn and ended up doing a full marathon. So that was the first time I did a marathon.
I became good friends with a guy in the Netherlands called Patrick Derks. He was a cyclist.
Yeah.
He was an endurance cyclist, but he liked all sports, and I went out with him a good bit. We were neighbours. But he was too good on a bike. And so our trips on the bike were leisurely.
Yeah.
So we went out for a run one day, and he decided to go on a long run but didn't tell me. And as a young athlete, I was a very good sprinter, at national level sprinter.
Yeah.
But nothing longer than 200 metres, didn't like it. But that day I found out that a pace just a bit quicker than a walk, I can do for a long time. And we went for about 45 or 6 kilometres that day.
What?
Very slowly, yeah. Very slowly. But we did, like, just over the marathon.
What were you like the next day?
Grant.
Feet, like?
Feet were a little bit sore. The very back of my Achilles was a little bit sore. But in general, I was fine.
I did a workout yesterday and I wrote it myself, like, and I said, I'll make myself run 600 meters, do all the stuff, and then do 600 meters at the end. And lying in bed last night, my legs were throbbing just from 600 meters. I can't imagine going for a run with someone.
No, there's somewhere in between.
Like, at any point, did you stop him and say, how long are we going for here?
No, we were having the chats.
How long were we running for, like, time wise?
I think around 5 hours. It was really slow.
But did you not?
I know. After an hour or two, I was thinking that we were on the way back, and I said, how far are we from home? And he said, we didn't turn yet. And I said, okay, right. Because we were falling on a canal.
I guess it's a compliment, though, because he obviously thought you were capable of doing it.
Well, he was trying to, you know...
Was he trying to make you say...
Yeah, he was trying to give me up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, let's give up. And so that's where that whole day, then we started saying, let's do a few of these races. He started talking about these long enduring races all over Europe, Slovakia, Germany, a lot of them in Germany.
Yeah.
And so we did a little bit of running training, more on the bike. We did a lot of different types of training to train for them. And so we signed up for this 20K, and that's where it became a 40K. So that was the nearly a marathon stage.
At what point of...
He had always planned on doing the 40K. He just said, we're doing the 20.
And when did you realise?
When my legs started to get sore.
So, like, near... Was there a point where you kind of were like, this is taking way too long?
No. I started to wear a watch after that, right? That's the first thing that I added.
Well, judging by the sun's point in the sky, we've been running for 4 hours.
I was getting sore. My legs were getting sore because we had gone out too fast.
Hmm. Oh, you were doing
20K. Because I thought it was 20. Yeah. And we had gone out way too fast. And he was suffering a little bit.
Yeah.
And he was well able, but he was suffering. So he said, yeah, we went out too fast. And he said, there's about 10 to go. And I said, we're way more than halfway. And he said, oh, we're doing 40. So, yeah, it's a little bit harder when everybody else is speaking different languages.
Yeah.
German, Dutch.
Yeah.
So the bands that you might have to be able to say and hear going along, you don't get those.
Yeah.
So those early days were tough that he could nearly say and do that to me, and I was signing up for a lot of this.
Yeah.
About 2 months later, we did that first long one. But 2 months later, we did one that was 100K. And I really found that one tough.
Is that just flat road? Or?
No, it's not. It was a little bit like Quest. It's over mountains and hills. And
So trains and tracks. Walk, running, like jog,
run. I'd say about 70% of it, and 30% of it is walking up stumbling mountains. Over stuff. Yeah, and falling down mountains.
How long did that take?
I find going down way worse than going up. It's just
because you think you're going to fall.
Yeah,
you're looking down.
I don't like going down at all.
Yeah.
And that whole break and the front of my shins suffer quite.
It's very quaddy as well. Because you're kind of leaning all the time.
I don't mind that part. It's further down those legs of mine. My little short legs, 28 and a half inch legs. I mean, honestly, your baby has longer legs than I have. But yeah.
How long did that take, the 100K?
I think we did it in 15.
Minutes.
15 hours.
15 and is there, because like, I know...
The 100K was a little bit less than 15 hours. I think it might have been about 13 hours.
And is this, you didn't stop during this one?
No.
The other one?
The next one that we did was 240. Okay. And it's timed over 2 days.
So it's like that.
You have 48 hours for all intents and purposes.
It's like that Quest 1220 thing.
Yeah, you have 48 hours.
Is it all running?
Most of it is running.
Is there a bike or
anything? No.
On foot?
No. And to be honest with you, the first 12 hours were the hardest by a mile because I had a tough week in work.
Yeah.
And I was just dead. And like I don't cry in general. I really don't cry. And I just wanted to cry. I had that feeling that I just want to... You know, shout, roar, I want to cry, I want to stop. And he was running with me and he said, shut up. And okay, we'll get some sleep. And we had a wrap for cold around us, and we both wrapped the insulated wrap around us, and we got into a hedge and we spooned in that hedge and fell asleep. I was gone for 4.5-5 hours. Like, I mean, out cold. He got up before that and left me there and put his backpack and wrap in with me, and I kept sleeping. But he got up after about three and a half hours.
I went ahead.
No, he just tried to make a plan. How am I going to get this Egypt to go the next 3/4 of the way? Because he thought I was going to give up.
Yeah.
He was convinced I was going to give up.
Why didn't you?
I felt much better when I woke up. I have a fairly empty head.
Yeah.
And what do I mean by that? Apart from when I said that I have all these things that I was thinking about in work, there's not much going on up there. You know, I'm primary eat, do something. If something is keeping me occupied, I'm like a small baby. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm the Labrador. You know that Labrador that always comes to you, slurping all over you? Throw me the ball.
Yeah.
I'm the very same. I throw me the ball, I go after that ball, throw in this direction, and I'm like, oh my God, it's gone over here, it's not over there.
So is that like once you started running, that was your only
thing? Yeah, I had to start to run, and then it was much easier.
Yeah.
And then at that stage, we were doing a lot together, so we were just having the chats. And we spoke about all sorts of stuff. He had a son that was autistic, and he was having a huge amount of problem that particular year for the first time ever.
Mm.
And so we had a during that trip itself, we had a brilliant talk. We also didn't go to sleep again. We went till the end. That was a pretty big achievement because I think we did it in about 29 and a half hours, considering that
we slept.
We didn't do too much stopping after that. Yeah. We went to all the food stops. I couldn't read a map. It was a thing that I tried to learn after, and I didn't, and I'm still not great with it. I'm an awful lot better than I was at the start, but he was brilliant with the map. So we got all the food stops. It was a huge achievement to somebody that 200 meter runner for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
And I knew also that I could do an awful lot more than, you know, what pop into your head, oh, I'd never do that.
Hmm.
Well, actually, we can all do way more than we think.
Yeah.
No, way more.
See, I'd be the opposite though with running or cycling. I don't like spending time with myself. Like, what I do and I don't. I kind of, like, a while ago, I was looking up the difference between introvert and extrovert. And it's like, I always thought introvert was just someone who just doesn't like people, or, you know, like wants to be on their own. But it's like, it's more that you can kind of recharge your batteries by being on your own. So you're, you know, you're not shy or anything. You're fine chatting to people and blah, blah, but that you need to be on your own for a little while. Like what Joe was saying in the first episode about, like, you know, he just needs that just to himself. Like,
yeah.
And I'd be kind of the same. Like I get on well with loads of people. Great. Whatever. I'm like, not really that shy. Like, I don't particularly like going out of my way to talk to someone different or someone new or whatever. I don't find it a joyful experience, but like I need to be on my own then, or like or with Orla just to settle and be like, okay, yeah, I can go again now tomorrow. So when I'm running though, I'm on my own for too long. So I start talking to myself, like, and I'm like, I am working hard to kind of get that voice, like you said at the start, to get that voice to be more encouraging, like, and to be less like, you're a fucking idiot, like, why are you doing this? But like, I remember I did that Gale Force Connemara and I did Gale Force West and both times.
How long were both of them?
Oh, I don't know, 40s. I actually can't remember. Gale Force West is like you run and then you cycle, you climb Crowpatrick,
yeah,
and come down and then you cycle back to Westport. I actually genuinely can't remember how long it is. Too long for me anyway. But the whole way through that, Orla stuck with me. So the Connemara one I did kind of more or less went on my own.
That's a run though, no?
Yeah, no, they all have the three things, yeah. Just kayak, bike and running or whatever. But like the run, I took off on another lad with Joe's brother Mark, took off on him. Quickly realised, oh, what am I doing with this guy? Like, he's so I was just like, I'm just gonna stop here for a pee, or you go on ahead. Like, so then the entire rest of the race I was on my own, and that whole race was just like, you fucking idiot, why did you sign up for this? What are you thinking? The whole way, like, so negative. And then same with Gale Force West, except with Gale Force West, it was more external because Orla stuck with me the whole way through. And I'd say I must have said her about 40 times, please just go away, just leave me, like, because she was like, you know, come on, we're doing great. Like, she's so positive. Like, she was like, we're nearly halfway up Crowpatrick. I remember there was two guys ahead of us that four or five times turned around and be like, that's the fourth time you said we're halfway up Crowpatrick. Stop lying to us. Because they were obviously listening to our pep talk as well. But like, I think if I did it now, I'm not going to do it because I didn't enjoy the physical experience of it. But I think if I did it now, I think the mental experience would be more enjoyable because I've worked hard on that kind of, like you said, not calling yourself an idiot. Like, not beating myself up. I just being like, yeah, that guy can pass me out. That's totally fine. Or like, you know, oh yeah, here's another hill. Brilliant. Can't be as bad as the last one. Whereas, like, a couple of years ago, I'd be thinking, like, another hill. Just sit down on the ground. Or lie face down in this puddle and just wait till someone steps in the back of your head. Do you know, like, I think, like, it's admirable really that you could have that much going on in your work life that, you know, you're working 15, 16 hours a day, that you start a run that like less than halfway through, quarter of the way through, you have to stop and you're thinking about giving up. It's incredible that you kept going, because like 4 hours sleep is nothing really. Like, it's incredible that you kept going. It's incredible that you didn't stop again, because like in a workout, you know, if you're holding a barbell and it's easy to just drop it for a second, it's surely the same when you're running. You've stopped once, you've broken the seal, you know you can stop now. So it's incredible that you didn't stop again and that you kept going. Like, you must have had...
No, the running for me is a little bit different. Running is natural movement of the body. So for me, it's harder. It's actually harder to stop, whereas picking up at something and, you know...
Yeah.
I always find that, you know, some people lie on the ground when they're dead at the end of something. I might do that, but I'm more likely to move.
Yeah.
You know, to keep walking, to try and get my breath.
Yeah.
And keep a movement. So running at a slow enough pace that we were doing, it's okay. It's not that fast. But it does get to it. You're somewhere along that, your mind does start to say, no.
That's enough then.
But doing it with Derek's was brilliant for me because he's a complete pain in the hole. I'm sorry, yeah. We stuck to a few things I'm not saying, but I can say this about a few people, that Patrick Derks is definitely, it was a huge pain in the hole. Like, he knew when I wanted to eat. Like, he was like the baby.
Yeah.
Before I was about to complain about eating, he'd say, we should, we're going to get food soon. And I'd go, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
And then before I'd complain about my feet or my shins or my ass or whatever, he'd say, oh, actually the backs of my legs are a bit sore. And I go, mine aren't too bad. So he was absolutely fantastic. Because I think he had that experience when we were cycling all the time. He knew that when I wasn't comfortable, I was starting to do this. But then realizing that, oh no, it's okay. You know, when you... saying to yourself that you're, that something's uncomfortable and not great is a big part of getting through it. Giving up is the part where you haven't actually gone through the hard work. Giving up is, you know it's going to be shitty and you've decided to stop. But realizing, no, this is going to be hard, and even saying it to somebody or hearing somebody else say it is a big part of getting to the other side. It's actually a huge part. And for me, he's probably the biggest reason that I got through it. But he also taught me that saying it to myself out loud, that, oh, fuck, this is hard, that is a great part of it. And again, having an empty head is brilliant. It's why I like listening to music, so that I don't have that opportunity, like you said, where my head says to myself, oh, stop, you have to stop here, I'm dying. Music takes that away. It fills the head, because again, I'm like the Labrador. I can't have too many things going on. I just can't. I really can't have too many. My head is not that big. I can't just go. So when there's music going, it's like, oh,
yeah,
there's some lovely lights. What's that's nice music, and I'm happy, and I'm able to keep going. But take the music away, and then maybe listening to myself all the same saying, this is tough, you won't make it. That's so hard.
This year, we did in Wolfhound, we've done the, I've done the 24-hour AMRAP.
This is your third, isn't it?
Three times now, yeah. So for anyone that doesn't know, 24-hour AMRAP is online kind of charity, potential to raise money for charity, basically. It's like an online competition.
It's an online event.
Yeah, and then people use it, like, you know, we use it and you used it to, you can, you know, fundraise a bit. So every hour there's three movements released online. You have a team of six people, you're supposed to, and every hour there's a movement or three movements released online, and the movements range from maybe really light deadlifts, or might be deadlifts for weight, where you know you can lift anything you want, or as much as you want, and it's up to you how many points you get. And you have to get 500 points per hour to stay in it. So you can keep going if you want, I suppose, but to finish the 24-hour AMRAP, you need to get minimum 500 in every hour to move on to the next hour to go again. We did it, so the first year, I remember it was so hard. Like, I just wasn't prepared for it at all. The second year was totally fine, because I knew what I was in for. I knew, like, oh, this is the shitty hour, but I know when I get through this shitty hour that the next hour is actually okay. And like, there was an aspect of, well, of like, oh, I've seen that person in that zone last year, and I know they need to be left alone, or I know they need me to go over and talk to them, or someone to talk to them, or whatever. And there's that kind of thing of like helping each other through the really shitty hours, so that the, and then knowing that they'll help you through your shitty hour when it comes, or whatever. So I did it again this year, even easier than last year, totally fine. Like, I was back training, I think I trained the first
2 days later.
Yeah, the first day after, or whatever, like the next day, or the day after maybe. But you've done it
four times.
Have you ever done it as a team of six?
No.
So sorry, one other thing, the team of six, the way that works is you, one person works at a time per team, and all your reps are added together at the end. So say this year, if I was doing something and then I'd rest and the next person would go, you do like a tag team kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the idea of six people means that you get rest before it's your turn again.
Yeah.
So you did it as a team of four?
I did it the first year. Well, the first year, two teams signed up in the gym.
Yeah.
I'd say. And we signed up in the summer. You know, everybody's the beach body. Everybody is happy, blah, blah, blah. First week of December was on, I think, on the 16th of December that year. First week of December, everybody started to pull out.
Yeah.
We had four or five people that pulled out. between the two teams. So we said we'd have two teams, and it was two teams of five, or then it went down to two teams of four.
Yeah.
And then it went down to one team. And on the day, we had four people. And nobody, sorry to say this out loud, but nobody was seen as a CrossFitter.
Yeah.
Like, at all. Like, I was quite new. We had a 17-year-old. We had a guy that was very new. It was his first week. Brilliant.
Deep end.
He was a power lifter. So, and we had an American girl. Brilliant. Okay, I can't think of her first name. Nora. Nora Murphy. She was great. She was about 6 months in CrossFit. And we started to do that 500.
Yeah.
You know, and we weren't really looking at the leaderboard. And then about halfway in, we started to look at the leaderboard, and we were last. And like, we couldn't believe that we were last. And we have to, we can't finish last. And we also started to see that right at the top was 80-20.
Oh yeah.
And I started to put it up on my Instagram and on Facebook, that fair play to 80-20, and I started to put up a lot about in the middle of the night about the charity, which was Laura Lynn that I was raising. We already raised a lot of money, I have to say that to you. We had already raised a lot of money. I think we were well into 20 something at that stage, and I had one big sponsor, and that sponsor had said that if an Irish team, because he's from the Netherlands, and he's actually from just outside the town from the 24-hour AMRAP.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, if an Irish team wins, he'll give an extra 10K. So I started to tell the 80-20 team that, hey, look, if we did. I told somebody that was in the gym, and they ended up telling them. I can't think of if Emma was in it, or PD also might have been in it that year. Neil was definitely in it himself. They didn't also have six.
Yeah.
I think they had five. But they won it.
Yeah.
We came fourth last, which was a major achievement.
Yeah.
We spent the next 12 hours trying to catch up hugely, and we did, and it was really enjoyable because of the amount of effort.
Yeah.
We definitely got no sleep. And we didn't eat much after that, because that's another thing too, in that 24 hours.
Yeah.
You're thinking that you're going to be eating all the time, and you have to eat. You have to be smart with what you eat.
But even I remember, like, people have been saying to you, like, oh, well, you get to rest when the other people aren't. Like, you might only get 20 seconds rest. Or you might, some of them you might get half an hour. If it's, like, say, rowing for meters or something.
Yeah.
But some of them, it might be literally, like, you put down the piece of equipment, you walk over, you talk to someone, you sit down, you look up, the person that's on before you is on now, and you're like, oh, what the fuck? Like, and you have to get back up again. It's not like you're working for 10 minutes off for 40 minutes. You might be working for 1 minute off for 4 minutes back on again, like, you know? So then, I suppose that brings me to my next question of, you do it as part of a team of four, and it's hard, and you surely had dark moments during that, where you know, that, like, the odd half hour where you're like, oh, wow.
No, fun. Oh, we had a lot of fun. I mean that now.
So as part of a group?
Yeah.
So then, why the fuck would you decide to do it on your own?
I wanted to raise a little bit more money. And I also was going through a tough time myself. My actual sickness was getting worse.
Yeah.
And when my sickness gets worse, I don't know, is it self-destruct button or a tester button, whatever it is, to see what I can do. But I wanted to test to see what I could do. I was in the middle of changing gyms, and I had no gym to do it, and I decided to do it on my own. And
Davy
Dunn, from CrossFit Powerful, who's an absolute gent, said he contacted me. Oh, use my gym.
Yeah.
Like, literally. Tell me what you want and blah, blah, blah. And he was having a class when I was starting, by the way, that Saturday morning. That's how good he was. So for me, I will be forever grateful to Davey. He's a pure gent. But I did it to prove it that I could do it. And I did it to see, to get to the other side. I told the organizer as well that I was doing it. So I do think, to be very fair, when he was programming those three, he was thinking of me.
Yeah.
Because no other year did he ever put in where one piece, one person could do.
Yeah.
And he had one of the movements
there was one
I
hour,
could
I
do.
Remember there was 1 hour that year, and it was stupid. It was like, hold on to the bar, hold on to an L-sit on the ground. And I remember, because we actually spotted you.
That's the only hour I didn't do 500.
What was your name again?
I can't even remember.
Oh, it was
something. A bear in the box.
Yeah, a bear in the box. Yeah. It was like one. And I remember we were going through the teams and I was like, geez, I was like, that team is barely scraping through on some of the hours. Like, they must be falling asleep or they must be just doing the 500 then, whatever, not. And then I can't remember, it came up on Instagram or something. And I remember Joe and myself were looking at the leaderboard on the, you know, you have to record a certain amount of your work or whatever.
Yeah.
So we had the laptop open and I was looking at it and I was like, do you reckon this could be just one person? And Joe was like, what do you mean? I was like, ah, bear in the box. Makes it sounds like it's one person. And I was like, and they're getting like, some hours are, you know, they're flying it. Other hours they're just getting like 501. Like, you know, they're just over the threshold.
I was just gone.
I was like, do you think that could be just one person? So we started doing a bit of research on Instagram and stuff. And we were like, fucking hell, it is one guy. I'm like, every so often, like, it stopped saying, at the beginning it was like, oh, what position are we in or whatever. And then after that it became like, did he get it done? Like, did he get that hour finished? Is he through to the next hour or whatever? And I remember messaging your man, what's his name, Renato, in the helmet. I messaged him saying like, I don't know if you're aware of this, but like there's one guy doing this on his own. And I was like, I don't know who he is or if you know he's doing it, but you need to give him some serious credit for it. And he messaged back saying, oh, we're aware that he's doing it. Like, that was just, from having done it three times as part of a team of six, it's admirable to do it as part of a team of four. It's like, geez, that must have been hard. But doing it on your own is like really impressive. And I can't.
And I didn't finish last.
I can't relate to the 240k. I can't relate to the 100k. But I can relate to the, like, I know what it's like to do that as part of a team. So I'm able to empathize, or like I'm able to stretch that and imagine what it's like to do it on your own. That's one of the most impressive things that anyone I know has done, is to do that. Not like, it isn't very difficult physically.
No.
Like, you wear your joints down, you know, you're like, oh, my arse is a bit sore.
You have to be smart.
Sore or whatever. Yeah, your hands get sore.
Yeah.
But like, mentally, and if you say that you're the Labrador with the ball or whatever, that you're told to do kettlebell swings, so you just do kettlebell swings, like, fair enough. But I know what it's like to hit a trough in that 24 hours, and I know what it's like to hit a peak, and I know what it's like to come down off a peak into a trough.
Yeah.
So like, were there moments during that where you were like, fuck this, like, what did I do this for? Is the Laura Lynn thing, was that just like,
people were good going, first of all, and they came, but like at 1 o'clock there was Aoife Lally and Leona Lau were there, and Aoife was, I could see that she was out of working during the day, she was dying and she wanted to go, and I said, go on. The two of them lie down and actually fell asleep for a while, but then got up and left, so there was nobody there from 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I had to go till 11 a.m. the next morning still. And to be honest with you, at that time when everybody went and they put it up, it was a difficult one at 2 a.m. I thought, fuck, I'll never get through this.
Yeah.
I literally said it. And the Labrador is that I had a blue ball, you know, the ball you have for getting into the knots and rubbing and rolling. Yeah. I had one of those balls and I went over to the wall and I had done it a couple of times earlier and I started to just hit it off the wall. And I just was doing the Labrador, hitting it off the wall for 5 or 10 minutes, drawing it down to one simple thing. And I thought, well, hang on, my two hands are feeling okay. My back does feel a little bit better now. I think I should be able to keep going. And I just went back over, looked at what was up for the workout and just kept going. And every time for the rest of that day that something came in, I just simplified it.
Yeah.
And went over to the blue ball, hit it up against the wall. A couple of people came in the next morning and brought me coffee. Paul Malone and his wife, Grace, brought me coffee. Actually, Grace didn't call me, brought his little girl. That was great. Because like, there was nobody there.
Yeah.
And it was a shitty morning. It was like at 5 o'clock in the morning, it was...
I remember everyone's there at the start, loads of people there at the start.
Yeah.
Then you get people dribs and drabs coming in. I remember this year two lads came in after a night out.
Yeah.
One of them goes to the gym. The other lad followed him because he thought he was going to a house party. And I walked into the gym and you could see his face and be like, what the fuck is going on here? And I remember he said to Joe at one stage, he goes, is this when it gets really busy? And Joe was like, at 4:30 in the morning. No, tends not to be busy at 4:30 in the morning. We're doing a charity event. But like, then you get to, you know, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, lonely hours, no one's coming in. 6 o'clock, no sign of anyone. 7 o'clock, still too early. It's a Sunday morning coming up to Christmas. 8 o'clock, 9, maybe one or two people might come in, then you start getting people coming in again. But it's lonely, like.
Ah, it's lonely.
Even we did it as teams. It was 3 teams. And it's still lonely, like. Because it's just dead. There's just silence, like. So I remember the first year we did it, we put on Christmas movies. So you'd be like watching Home Alone, Grant, going off to a bit of work, come back to him, whatever. And I remember at 3 o'clock in the morning, someone put on Polar Express. I fucking hate that film. I've never seen it before, but that was my dark. That was like, that was dark. And I just, all my hate projected towards that movie. And I don't think I'd ever be able to watch it again, because it'll just be like, be like flashbacks of like, that was a kettlebell swing hour. Do you know, it's just like that. My hate for the whole AMRAP thing was just projected towards that one object.
It's not a bad thing to hate. It's a pretty shitty film.
You mentioned there a couple of times about being sick with work and how good they were to your work, and then with the 24-hour AMRAP and when you... can you give us a rundown of, like, I suppose, what it is that you're battling with and what's the symptoms, and then, like, how it affects your daily life or...
When I played all sports all through my life. I have a good level of athletic ability. Got to national championships every year, 100 metres, 200 metres, long jump. Played underage for Meath football, Gaelic football, all the way up to minor. So I have a pretty good, let's say, sporting background. I was healthy.
Yeah.
But I used to have these blackouts, and when I was 17, we found out that it was high blood pressure, but they couldn't find out a reason why.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you get on, you have it. I wasn't being treated for it. They said we'd test it every now and again.
You just kind of managed it yourself, like.
Well, it was the 80s. So, you know, when I'd go into the doctor and he'd test it, oh, it's not too bad today, you know, keep going because you're young. But in 1998, I started to have a lot of these blackouts, along with huge amounts of blood in my urine.
Okay.
And not like a little bit, like a lot. And I let it slide for a while, but I started to physically slow down also. So I knew that there was something wrong. I just had a daughter born the September before that, and I went to the doctor, and she immediately said, no, there's something wrong. Like, there's something wrong here. And she wanted me to go to the hospital. But I didn't. I went to the next day and I got some bloods done. And 2 days later, I went to a clinic and seen the specialist. And 2 days after, she called me in, which was strange because she had said already that it would probably be weeks before they'd hear from me. And she said, oh, no, you have a very aggressive form of kidney disease and we need to do more tests. And it was a total shock to the system.
It was just genetic, like?
Yeah. So I found out a few weeks later that I had a genetic kidney disease, all parts. I have a secondary issue, IgA, as well, which is another issue. But I'm the longest living male in Ireland with all parts. Like, most males with all parts will be dead before they're 40.
Yeah. And you're like 70.
Yeah. I'm 50 next February. So, but in those early days, you know, to be told that you've got years to live, like, everybody has years to live, but when somebody puts a time limit on it, and I get told that my sight will start to suffer and that my hearing will start to go and that the nerve, it affects the nerve endings as well, and that I'll have problems with food, like, I was going, I'll be very honest. When I was told first, I ignored everything.
Yeah.
I ignored everything. Said,
can't be true, like, kind of thing.
These are fucking idiots.
Yeah.
Like, I was playing football 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, that was in my head. But I did start to deteriorate. But I still kept saying, I feel great.
Yeah. I remember you at Castle Games last, not the one gone by, the one before that Orla did, and at Filthy the next week in the airport. You know, in the,
yeah,
whatever you call it.
What?
You were kind of coming apart at the seams there. Like, I remember really Orla said that she looked over, and at one stage of Castle Games, you were like sitting in a stand on your own.
Yeah.
And she was like, that's weird for him now. And I remember at Filthy, you were competing at Filthy, and I remember did you pull a pec or something?
No, I to be honest with you, I had an issue there.
You were injured anyway. But then I remember talking to you and I was like, this lad looks...
No, I hadn't trained in weeks.
He doesn't look right at all. And I remember asking you like, oh, okay, or whatever. And you were like, your hand was on your kidney, like on the outside of your body, obviously. But like you're holding it and visibly in pain. And you were like, ah, yeah, sure, just another workout now. And then it's finished. Like, was that a low point?
So the deafness I can deal with.
Yeah.
or everybody else usually has to deal with it. The sight, I have the laser, it has helped, by the way. The short sightness is definitely getting worse. And it's a little bit different than normal short sightness. Mm. So I have special glasses. I just got them before Christmas. That helps. You can do different ways to help yourself. But the worst thing is the pain.
Yeah.
Pain is really hard to deal with. But I have to weigh this up by saying that everybody carries a cross.
Yeah.
No matter who you are. You know, like, you have something that I don't know about, maybe that it's a big burden in your life. Somebody else has gone through cancer and they've got to the other side. Somebody else has lost their mother and father the same year. You know, somebody else has lost their child. You know, there's loads of things that people carry around.
So is that how you kind of get through it then? Is that you're like, someone somewhere is worse or just as bad?
That's why I do a little bit for chat. For me, I like to do something for others because it helps me, you know, realize what I have.
Yeah.
Because there is so many people out there that are way worse.
Mm.
And in the clinic that I go to, most of the people that in the clinic I have seen, you know, goodbye. I get my bloods done every twice a week, actually. I go to a clinic. I should be going every month. I'm not as good at going to the clinic as I should be. But, because I'm going for so long. But I need to get my ultrasounds. I need to get my MRIs. Yeah, I take multiple treatments. The biggest one is for my heart because my heart regulation is really poor.
Mm.
That's probably the biggest benefit in the last few months is that after my last rounds of treatment last year or this year, earlier this year, where I was really sick, I had to stop working and I stopped working out. My heart regulation was really poor. And that's a first sign that your kidneys are beginning to fail.
Mm.
And my left kidney is only working at about 7%. It has 9 coils in there to stop it from breaking down because there's holes in it.
Mm.
And the right one is pretty good. This is what's keeping me alive. But we won't take this one out because as soon as if we took this one out, this one would know it was on its own and would probably fail. So we're leaving them there because they're working as twins at the moment.
And if you got a transplant, would the same thing happen again?
No. Okay, so all ports, you know, you can go into the dialysis and you can get transplants, but I have 2 underlying autoimmune pieces, so more than likely, like 99.9999%, my body would give up.
Okay.
And or basically attack it. Because I've got other issues with immunity that they already know this.
Yeah.
So so dialysis will be no good for me. So I have to live a good life for as long as I possibly can. Could be 1 year, it could be another 10. Could be maybe 20. The longest male in the world is American. He's 71.
Mm.
So I have a chance. There's one other person. There's really not many after 40. So then, you know, most of them are, you know, ahead of me. So I've got to 50. And the problems that come along with it have not been that bad with me.
Just talk to anyone about it. Like, as in... Like, do you go to counseling about it or do you... Because it's a lot to deal with.
Not really.
Or like, have you got tools, say, that you use? Or is that your tool? Like that thing of like, there's someone worse or...
Someone worse is brilliant.
Because like, there might be someone listening to this that needs to hear how someone else deals with something. You know, they could be dealing with something similar or...
Like, no, again, I think that everybody does do something similar. But if you look at it from a selfish point of view, if you look at everything from a selfish point of view, you're fucked.
Hmm.
Because then you will only think yourself, you won't see everything else around you. So for me, it's important that what can I do for my family? What can I do for my friends? That automatically helps me. And then what you can do for a complete fucking stranger is something that can't be replaced. Because that will live a long time with you.
Yeah.
And when you see good from that, it's a huge help. So I think it's really important to not, whatever you're trying to deal with, don't let the issue get bigger than you. So this is a relatively big thing, because it's getting worse.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better. It gets worse.
Yeah.
So, but after you say it, you need to say it, and then you need to say, fuck, I have an added bonus, I have to say to you, that I want to live forever. So I've got this thing also driving me that I want to do as much as long as I can. And I think I've lived a fucking really good life. Like, honestly, if you're ever get the job of having to look down that hole, and they're watching me being put down that hole, you have to say to yourself, he lived an unbelievable life.
Because
I lived a great life.
It's funny, like, the parallels there between, what's your man that you did the endurance race with, the Dutch guy?
Derks. Yeah, Patrick.
What he was saying to you, and what you were saying to yourself during that race, and the parallels between that and this, of like, you've said it out loud now that it's shit, and now you just have to keep going and move past it. So you said it out loud during the race, like, that you were screwed, and then you just broke through the wall and kept going.
I did learn it there.
Yeah.
It's
funny, the things that you get from sport that you wouldn't think come from it, like, you know, that resilience, like.
Sports teaches it everything. And CrossFit, you spoke a little bit about last week about the community. The community is what makes CrossFit different.
Mm.
And it makes it different too from a lot of other community-based sports like Gaelic Games. Because most people are doing everything to be better.
Yeah.
No matter what that is, whether it's volunteering, whether it's going to the gym during the class, everybody has that piece together. That where they're clapping everybody at the very end, you know, just to make sure that they finish and that they feel okay for finishing if they are last. I'm not mad about that myself when I'm that last person. But yeah, it's still a big piece. CrossFit's very unselfish.
Yeah. I have to say, if I admire you for your, I'm going to call it stupidity, for doing the AMRAP on your own. But like that is, it's admirable, like doing the 24 hours on your own would have been, I suppose physically it's probably the thing that if I had to pick out, like, why do you like Vincent so much? Like, that would be one of the physical components, was that you decided to do it and did it and, you know, finished it. But like, on a personal level, your positivity is like second to none. Like, I admire so much that, without, I'm not trying to sound patronizing or anything, but like, the fact that you have so much on your plate, but that you do so much for other people, whether that's volunteering at a competition, going over to a competition when you know you're not well enough to be there, and doing it anyway. And then, like, when you came home from Cassie Games that time, you went straight to hospital, like. Like, it's, again, it's like, from the outside looking in, it's easy to say, like, ah, stupid, like, what's he doing that for? Sure, just look after himself. But like, it's your way of looking after yourself. And I, like, just wanted to say, we take the piss out of each other a lot, but I love you. I think you're amazing. The positivity that you have, and the attitude that you have, and the resilience that you have is absolutely second to none. And if there's ever a time where you do need a kidney, give me a shout. Look, I'll finish up then with something more lighthearted, so we'll do a quick fire round. Now, I did this in the past, I did either or.
Okay.
I forgot to type out the either or questions, so I just did kind of open ended, but it still has to be quick fire. Right?
Okay.
So, a favourite workout?
I don't have one.
You give out about Joe being slow doing these.
But I don't have one. Like, if it's long and shitty, I like it.
Grand.
And if it's short, I don't.
What's your biggest strength?
I'm a complete pain in the hole, and I'm fairly stupid. And those combined makes me good at a lot of other little things that people don't like being good at.
So your ignorance.
Yeah.
Ignorance is bliss. What's your biggest weakness?
My biggest weakness? Overhead strength.
Shoulders, like?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a lot for the same people. What's your go-to coffee order?
Flat white or espresso. They're 50-50.
Yeah. Favourite podcast?
Yours. Why am I?
Obviously. What bands or musicians' greatest hits would you put on if you're going to do a session?
The long stuff, Roan. I'd be with Joe on this one. Hans Zimmer, something like that.
Yeah.
Leading Arrow, Vicky, people, somebody like that. And then short and fast, something loud where I can't hear. Can be anthem.
Yeah.
Once it's loud and banging in the background, that's nearly perfect.
Drowns out the voice. Yeah.
Drowns out the voice.
Best competition you've ever judged at?
Best competition I ever judged at. I really liked two. I have two, right? They are joint. Castle Games last year was really special.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Joe and you being there and all the athletes.
I'm absolutely good at that same weekend.
Over both of those days. And if I'm honest with you, also Midlands Throwdown is a very small little box, but there's always something different, and I love the environment that's around that.
Yeah.
Between Michael and the team that are down there and everything that they do, and a lot of first time athletes, and yeah, I like that. Those are my two favourites.
Best competition you've ever competed at?
Best competition I ever competed at is the Filthy.
Yeah. And then last one. Worst competition you've ever judged at?
Worst competition I ever judged at. Fuck. It's not really fair. I explain why. Because the whole volunteer piece is a big thing, and then it's my opinion.
Yeah.
And then somebody else might say, oh yeah, and then somebody else that put a lot of time and effort into that might also say, fuck, I put a lot of time and effort into that, and then that stops them from doing it again just because they feel, oh, I put a lot of time and effort, it shouldn't. So for me, my opinion doesn't count that much.
County series is probably a safe answer there, is it? It's not going to happen again.
Maybe with somebody else.
Yeah. Right. Listen, thanks for coming on. Brilliant. Absolutely loved it. Great chat. And I've wanted to have a coffee with you for a long time. If I'd known that was all it was going to take, I would have started a podcast 3 years ago to get it done.
Thank you.
Thanks.